This is Daphne Maxwell Reed. I'm hanging out here with Marcia and Domitee. I'm having a great time on Shypedia. Join us.
That's wonderful. Hey. That's perfect. Yeah, Domitee Pongo. I know it's the strangest name on the planet.
I just want to get it right.
You might know her from her role as Aunt Viv on Fresh Prince from 1993 to 1996, but she's also worked on almost all of our favorite sitcoms. I mean, you practically raised me from Moesha.
And did I do a good job?
Yes, you did. You see, I'm here. Got me a job. You know, Sister Sister, In the House, a ton of our favorite movies. She was a Northwestern grad, even though she's from the East Coast. I'm claiming her. I'm calling her a Chicago native. Can we claim
you? I lived here a little while. Yeah.
A little while. Okay.
My son was born in Illinois, so.
It counts.
Yeah, it counts.
To say the least, she's a history maker.
Ah, yes, my girl.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I adore her. She's doing such a good job with the project.
And the voice you hear is Daphne Maxwell Reed. So welcome to Shypedia.
Hi, everybody. My pleasure.
So not only is she an actress, and you studied interior design at Northwestern University, you have just a myriad of gifts. But I want to talk about the gift that has opened doors for me, no pun intended, at Northwestern University first. So last month, I was in Memphis doing some reporting on the events around the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the 50th anniversary.
Right.
Written some pieces for the Sun-Times about it. It was a really visceral experience being down there. What I didn't know before I started to read up on you and your work was that a month later at Northwestern University, May 3rd, 1968, some students at Northwestern.
100 of us.
You included.
Yes.
What did you guys do?
We got up that early that morning and took over the bursar's office. Now, the bursar's office is where the only computer at Northwestern was housed. Mm. It was where they did the paychecks and everything else. We took over the building, locked it down, and we were in there for 38 hours while our leaders were negotiating with the university for more pertinent things to happen at Northwestern to suit the African-American population there that was growing. When I first came to Northwestern, there were 36 of us in that class. Mm. And then the next year, they had another 100 that came. But we were a very small minority there, but we were strong, vocal, and we wanted some African American studies. We wanted some African American professors. We wanted some relative things to our community and a place to gather. Housing, because, I mean, when I first got to Northwestern, I went to the dorm, and I went to check into my room, and there was this girl standing there, and I said, excuse me, this is my room. She said, oh, no, I'm not rooming with any niggas. Oh. And I said, well, where are they?
Good answer.
I
said,
love it.
I'll take a single room, thank you. And I moved. So we had a little bit of a housing problem there, and so we wanted a place where we could feel comfortable. And the university negotiated with us, and our leaders were fantastic. We got most of the things that we were asking for, but there's still a lot of things that Northwestern can do better. And hopefully with this commemoration, we'll remind them that they need to keep working.
Well, talk about the commemoration. What's happening?
We've got 3 or 4 days of events. We had a film that was made talking about some of the leaders and some of the people who were involved in the sit-in. Which is what it was. It was just a sit-in. And then we have luncheons. We have dinner with the president. We have a gala. We're doing an awards ceremony. And some of us are being honored for our work at Northwestern. Wow. And I'm honored to be honored at the gala. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful reunion of about 100 of us.
Wow.
That we haven't seen in 40, 50 years.
Mm. You know, and you were once when you were at Northwestern, you were the first African American homecoming queen there.
Yeah, they didn't like that.
I'm sure.
They didn't like it so much they didn't put it in the yearbook.
So how did you become at the first homecoming queen?
Beats me. My roommate said, "Oh, go ahead. Sign up for I signed up for some homecoming queen event and I didn't even know what a homecoming queen did." But I became a person on the court. And then there was a day of voting. And I was working in Chicago, so I didn't even vote. I get back. I said, ask my roommates, did y'all vote? No, I didn't. I said, okay, I'm going to see my boyfriend this weekend. So, thank you. I'm out of here. And they went to crown the queen, and the president stood there and held this. He said, and the queen is, and they called a name. And I thought, sure, it was the girl standing next to me. And they said, it's you. And I'm like, what?
They didn't just say, it's you, though, did they?
They did. No, the president called my name out, but okay. I didn't really hear it because I certainly was not expecting it. And I had to go through all of the ceremonies and be presented to the John Evans Society, which was another horrible day. I trekked all the way over to the hall, and they introduced the court, and the girls would go out, and you would hear the audience go, and they, all four of them went, and the queen is Daphne Maxwell Reed. And I walked out, and it was that dead silence. I said, okay, thank you. And I went back to my dorm.
That's okay, though.
It was,
but it,
was
it seems like
fun.
That's like the story of your life, however, because people have been scolding you to do things, and you're just so nonchalant. Okay, I'll do it. So that's how the whole modeling came up as well, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Somebody saw me in a picture that was taken, and she said, oh, go see Eileen Ford in New York. And I went to see Eileen Ford, and she said, okay, we're going to put you on the roster. Okay, what does that mean?
Okay, and so, ladies and gentlemen, she became the first African-American on the cover of a Glamour magazine.
I was, yes, 1969. It was just me having fun. They said, you going to model? I went, yeah, what do you got to do? Smile? I said, oh, yeah, I know how to do
easy.
That. But I learned all what was going on behind the scenes and every opportunity that I got. And I tell you, I was born blessed. Mm-hmm. With a lot of gifts. I'm just using the gifts that God gave me, trying to manifest to honor him, because I have been so blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And every opportunity I take as an opportunity to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I learn what's going on all around me. So if that ever comes up again, I can do every one of them jobs that they did that was happening to me. And I've just been blessed.
Wow. What do you think that did for women who look like you then? Not only at campus, but then becoming a Ford model. And what do you think that did for black women across the country and at Northwestern University when they saw a black woman get up on that stage and accept that?
Well, a lot of people at Northwestern University were not pleased. But I asked them why I didn't have any pictures in the yearbook. And the woman who was the editor said, oh, it wasn't important this week. I said, okay, thank you very much. You are not important to me either. Told the university, you will not hear from me. And they came calling when I got famous. And I said, I told y'all, you will not hear from me. And so I held that grudge until they apologized.
And they did submit a formal apology to you.
40 years later, the new president said, I would like you to come and present the crown to this year's homecoming queen.
Wow.
And I married one of the guys who was a student at Northwestern. And my son grew up knowing that we both went to Northwestern. But he said, I'm going to Northwestern. I said, no, you're not.
Yeah.
And he went to a culturally appropriate college and did very well. He has a PhD right now. And he came back with me to that homecoming. I said, you don't know what happened here, but you will learn this weekend.
Mm.
And he was very proud of me.
So what does it mean to come back there then for the commemoration all these years after burying the hatchet? And
yeah, it took me about 45 years to bury the hatchet. And with the apology, it helped.
Yeah.
But I'm coming back because of the people that I was here with.
That's
who
right.
won my heart.
That's right.
So I'll be so excited to see all these folks I haven't seen in 40 and 50 years.
Tell us about the Black House at Northwestern.
Well, the Black House was one of the requests that we had because there was no place for us to gather where we could feel comfortable.
So I'm curious, is it still around?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we are now raising funds to renovate the place. So that's going very well. And there was a mural that was painted in the Black House. And when I went back a couple of years ago, the mural wasn't on the wall. I'm going, oh, did they paint over the mural? And they said, no, it was on canvas. We took it down. So they're putting it back up. And it is all of our leaders from the 60s. Were represented on that mural. And it was, I mean, it was right after King. So we had a lot of angst going on in America at the time. And we were in a mood to make sure that we were moving forward and not backwards.
Do you feel like, Marsha, just one more on this note. Do you feel like we're moving backwards right now sometimes? And the reason I ask that question is I've been having conversations with some well-meaning white friends of mine who wonder why there's a need for safe spaces. And to them, it looks like self-segregation when we say we need a black house because we need a space just for us to be ourselves. And I feel like in 68, even though times were other conditions were much worse, it was much easier to understand why black people needed this safe space.
Well, it was when in the 60s was when they came up with this integration idea. It wasn't integration that black people were asking for. We were asking for desegregation. We were asking for equal, not secondhand, not sent to the back of the room. We were asking for equality. We had a thriving community in the 30s, 40s, and 50s of self-sufficiency. We didn't want that to go away. We wanted it to be as equal and access as equal as it was for any other community.
Right.
So we weren't asking to integrate. We were asking for our just due. And we are still asking for our just due. And we have to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. This should not be happening. What is happening now to black men being accosted by police and just unnerves me is akin to the lynchings that happened in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And until it's talked about, you don't know it's happening. White folks don't know that my son could be stopped, PhD in biochemistry. Mm-hmm. Nice young man. He could be stopped and was stopped once in North Carolina with a shotgun put in his head. Mm. And he said, we won't be buying gas here. We're leaving. Mm. Mm. And this happens today. And until it is exposed and more people know that this is happening, it's not going to stop.
Now, current news currently with Kanye West.
I don't even pay any attention. Oh. I don't know. I'm not even on that page. I don't need to hear that noise.
That says enough.
It's noise.
Yeah.
But how can ours be used as a vehicle for activism then? Because on the one hand, I look at Kanye and all these people are having these conversations. And I'm like, well, he's just talking. It doesn't really mean anything. And then you start to see.
It does to him.
It does to him. It does to him. And to white people who use what he says to justify what they want to do anyway.
The problem is they want to see black people as a monolithic group. Mm-hmm. And we're not monolithic.
At all.
There are so many different kinds of black people. I'm sorry, but I don't know what Kanye says. I don't listen to his music.
You don't want to know what he says.
I don't care. I have other things that I'm interested
in. That's right.
And there are black people who are not represented by Kanye. If that's what they want to focus on, that's up to them, not up to us. Mm-hmm. And that's their judgment. And we have to make sure that all of our voices are heard.
Yes.
Because all of our voices are valid.
But since we're so, as a society, so bought into what this entertainer said or this media platform said, I'm wondering how we can use arts, as you have in your career too, as a vehicle for activism and to inspire people who are on the opposite end of the Kanyes of the world.
What we have been doing for the past 40 years that I've been in show business, my husband and I, who happens to be Tim Reed, who you are friends with, thank mm-hmm. goodness.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Mr. Reed, I'm sorry.
We have been developing projects because we've been blessed enough to have the opportunity to develop projects and to shoot them and to make television series and to make movies. We want to make sure that there's integrity in the stories we tell. We want the stories told from our point of view, from a community that people are not familiar with. Mm-hmm. That was what Frank's Place was all about. A wonderful television show we did for CBS back in the 80s. And we wanted to show that not everybody is black, jive, shuckin', rapper. It's just not the case.
Right.
And they need to be exposed to all sides of our community.
You know, it's so empowering because, you know, it seems like from a woman's point of view and to hear it coming from you, it makes more sense. You know, because currently, when we look at the Kanye West in the news, and I know I've seen the little memes and the stuff online. I know you ignore this stuff, but, you know, they have memes going around saying who he's married to, how it makes a difference of the women that's in our lives. It says a lot, you know.
Listen to your grandmother. Have respect for women, and you'll be okay. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah.
Have respect for the people that you're with. And you young people, it's wonderful to be on those machines and all that electronic stuff. But learn how to look each other in the eye and talk to each other and see what somebody feels.
Yes.
You can't do that online or on a cell phone. You have to see people's body language. You have to be able to read it so you can understand what they, where their intentions are, not just their words. Because words are losing their value. They're being thrown out and they mean nothing. They mean nothing except what you want to interpret them to be. And that's not honesty. That's not truth. Truth is truth. There's no absolute, no other kind of truth, no alternate truth. It's truth or it's not truth.
Right.
Period. No in between.
And you have to learn how to think for yourself. Judge how you feel about something and don't just feel that way because some entertainer or the crowd is doing that. Have a voice in where your world is going because it's up to y'all. We've done our part and we're kind of fading off into the sunset. Don't let us fade with a crippling.
And it saddens me because it takes us now to the point with Mr. Bill Cosby and, you know, what's going on in the media. And I do know that you had your own production company at one point, correct?
We had a movie studio. We had an entire studio with production companies, a distribution company. Yeah. Wow.
And so in the news now, they're saying all these allegations started to come about once he decided to go
try to buy
NBC Network.
Yes, they did. And Bill is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I feel bad that he got caught up into this web. But you got to pay the piper if that's what the jury says. But I feel for him and his family. I feel for his family.
I can only imagine what Camille is going through about all of this.
Yeah, this is not something good to be going through. And the pendulum is swinging. And pendulums tend to swing too far in one direction. So we have to be able to modulate that and make sure that what we're doing is truthful and necessary and adequate. I'm not saying don't, but think about it evenly, apply it evenly, and adjudicate it evenly.
You've been blessed to participate in shows, as you talk about, showing that there isn't just one type of black person, like blacks aren't a monolith, there isn't just the rapper. You've been on The Cosby Show, but also on Fresh Prince, of course. And I've always wanted to know, and I'm sure you get asked this question a lot, but what it was like behind the scenes, coming into a role and just seamlessly working on that show through the end of it, when Will turns and breaks that fourth wall and says, "Oh, Viv, you look different."
Yeah.
And
since I had that baby, I look different.
And we just fell in love with you all the same.
I hope so, because I was so honored to be chosen, and it was 200 people up for that job.
So what was the process like? And tell us a little bit about what happened with Mrs. Hubert and what happened.
I don't know what happened. Okay. I know that during time for when you're doing your contract for the next year, it came time to do the contract. There are two levels of contracts. One is all shows produced. One is 7 out of 13, which is a lot of shows, but not the big contract.
We'll see. Uh-huh.
And I think she had a 7 out of 13 contract, and she wanted the full contract. This is the only thing I've heard. And her agent says, well, just hold out. And NBC said, next. And they called an audition and auditioned about 200 of us. And I hit it off with James, who I adore him. And we just hit it off. And I guess it showed in our auditioning. They chose me to be on the show. And I was absolutely thrilled because 3 years before, I had been asked to audition for some show with a rapper. I'm going, I don't like no rapper. I went home. I said, no, sir, I'm not going to audition for no half-hour show with a rapper. I went home. I turned on the TV and saw the I said, oh, did I make a mistake? So when they called the next time, honey, I was on that plane. So I was really happy when I got that job.
Now, did you have to work close with Quincy Jones?
Well, I've known Quincy even before the show. So no, Quincy wasn't on the set or anything.
Okay.
I mean, he'd show up every once in a while and everybody waved and stuff. But he didn't have on the set. He may have been in the big room with the big folks, but he didn't come down to the set very much. But I know that the first day I walked on that set, waiting in my dressing room were 24 red roses and love note from Will Smith saying welcome. And that was it. They just hugged me and said, let's get to work.
Wow. Wow. Now going into that audition, you said something I thought was really, really powerful and freeing, because a lot of artists listen to this podcast and are trying to figure out their ways into the industry. And you said, when you audition, don't take it personally.
No, don't take it personally. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the people who are choosing what they think should be the character. If you come in with the vibe that they have been anticipating, you got a shot at it. But it has nothing to do with your talent, and you shouldn't take it personally. You just weren't chosen for that job. That means that job's not yours, but there's another one that is.
And I thought that was great, because you talked about casting directors already having a vision for what they want to see and just waiting on that vision to walk
through
the door.
It's not the casting directors. It's the director.
The director.
And the producers.
Okay.
They are the ones who got the green light to do this show, and they have in their mind all the things that they think will make this show magic. And this character is going to look like this and act like this. And this character is going to look like this. And if they walk in the door, they get hired.
Right.
If they don't walk in the door, or it's they have to decide whether, will this work with the vision that I've got? So it has nothing to do with you. So if you want to go in the business, find a good hobby that you really enjoy doing where you can make some money while you're waiting to be chosen.
Now talk about the worst audition you've ever had.
Oh, I have lots of bad auditions. The ones that I really detest now are the ones I have to do on video to send to somebody. You don't get any notes. You get a script and they say, okay, put this on tape and send it in. What are they looking for?
Right.
I don't have the script, so I don't know where this character plays. And I just say the words and go about my business. I don't like that.
I'm sorry, you guys, but just sitting here next to you, Mrs. Reed.
Yes.
She's so beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you.
She's so beautiful.
This is my auntie, man.
No, she's mama. This is mama. Okay? God, mama.
Okay.
Okay.
I be.
She's the mother of all. It just feels like once you were on Fresh Prince, it's like, man, that's mama.
Oh.
You know? So this beautiful garment that you have on.
Yes.
It's very beautiful.
You got to go to my website and see some of the other ones that I made.
And that website is exactly, can you give us that website to view?
Daphne, and that's spelled Daphne. Don't add no more letters to that. Daphne is Daphne. And then Maxwell Reed is Reid. And it's DaphneMaxwellReed.com.
And you carry a lot of garments like this. It's so classy and elegant.
I make them custom.
Oh, wow.
So they're all custom made. You get to choose your fabric, and we measure you, and I whip it up on my sewing machine with my hands.
You see that, ladies? She just taught us three lessons. Be hands-on.
Hands-on.
Dress with some class.
Style.
Cover it up.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. I can do that other thing, too. So I remember a show I had called Lynx on Showtime.
Uh-huh.
Y'all should check out that show. I, for the first time in my life, got to play a hooker. And boy, I had a ball.
Wait a minute.
And it was on Showtime. I don't even know if I'm old enough to watch it.
I saw the video, the Whispers video.
Oh.
It's a love thing. She was a reporter, Domati, in the beginning. Yes, she was.
Two or three videos with them. I
really?
Adore them. Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But just know that this design thing didn't come new. She started with an undergraduate degree in interior design and architecture from Northwestern University. And it looks like you're tapping into those skills again with your new books that you have.
I love doors. And I think it's my architectural background that has me focus on the details. And what doors represent to me is a metaphor for life. Mm. Mm. Because you think about a door as being opportunity, curiosity, adventure, anything that just means the next passage.
That's right.
And I like the textures, the colors, the craftsmanship. They all draw my eye. I love detail. And I want to show people through these books that I've done and their photographs that I've taken around the world of doors. Through these books, I want you to look at these doors and remember your life, to dream, and to think of the details along your journey. Mm. Because your journey is not just thinking about where you want to go and getting there. It's how you get there. And all along the journey is the richness that makes your life wonderful. Be sure to just pay attention to the details as you go along.
Enjoy the moment. Live in the moment.
In the moment, and notice what's around you, because it really helps to round out your appreciation of your being here on this earth.
And talk about some of the places on this earth you went to.
Oh, I've been all over the world. Africa, Italy, England, Germany.
What's your favorite?
China.
And they're taking pictures at each of these places.
Morocco. Oh, boy. Yeah.
But Scotland. Which one stood out the most?
Yeah,
well, I keep going back to Italy. There's a whole bunch of color and craftsmanship in Italy. And I really love the fact that they love life in Italy, and you can feel it in the food, you can feel it in the people, you can feel it in the whole milieu of being in Italy. So I really love going to Italy, but I like being nosy and going to places that nobody else has been, like Belgium. Okay.
Right.
I got on a train and went up to Belgium, went to two cities. I'm all by myself, traveling alone, taking pictures of doors. I had a ball.
Now tell us about the publishing process of these pictures. You're hands-on from beginning to end.
From beginning to end. I take the pictures. I load them on my computer. I format them into the book size and style that I want. I do it all myself. I lay out the book, and then I take the file to the printer. Well, I upload it to the printer and say, print this book. It's called Published by Me. And I do that for all of my books. And I've done 4 Doors books. The first one was all over Europe. And the second one was only Cuba.
Mm.
Cuba 2015, it's opening closed doors, which is the year that our wonderful President Obama said, open up this embargo and let this happen here. And I'd been going to Cuba for years, and finally I wanted to show the world what Cuba was actually like, not just how they think it should be. So I went all down the west coast of Cuba and down the middle part outside of the big cities and just had a wonderful time staying in bed and breakfasts with Cubans and having the food native to what they eat. And I had a great photographic trip with a bunch of other photographers. And that became a book unto its own. And then I did Belgium, and then I did France. I did 3 cities in France, Toulouse, Auvillar, and Paris. I just like going.
Right. Just picking up.
You are an inspiration.
I love that purple wall.
This picture right here. I love that purple wall. Because it reminds me, the door, the shape of it, the architecture around it, somewhat reminds me of the door when you're going back into the Elmina slave castle in Ghana. And that's where my parents are from, West Africa.
Ghana,
so I go back frequently.
Uh-huh.
And the door is called the Door of No Return.
No Return, yes.
And then when you go on the other side of it, it's called the Door of Return because we get a chance to come back. We get back.
Get back to home.
And so when I look at these books, I think about that, that really means as far as what doors represent. And for our ancestors, literally, that was the door of life and death, essentially.
That is. Yeah. And you'll recognize that details in your life have more meaning than you think when you think back on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they affect you, whether you consciously know it or not. Mm-hmm. The details of your life really affect you. So pay attention.
DaphneMaxwellLee.com.
I have a recipe book over here, Doma T.
Recipe books too?
Yes.
I didn't get
that. Grace and Soul and Mother Wit. I love it. This is perfect. This is a perfect title, number one.
Thank you.
Also, I noticed in here that you teach people how to set the table.
Yes.
That's important.
How to set up a kitchen.
Uh-huh.
What to have in your pantry and your refrigerator so that you can make a meal at any time without
ladies,
running out
to the
store.
Okay, ladies, so if you want to get married, this is what you need to know. Okay.
And if you're getting divorced, this is the book. Hey, this is for anybody who wants to try to bring that family gathering back into their life. Takeout can be good sometime, but it's really nice to get to know people one-on-one at your table and to be able to express yourself through the serving of food. I learned that from my mother. She was so joyful when she served food and when she cooked. I just thought, oh my, she really puts a lot of value in expressing herself through this food. And that's what I did. And we've been gathering these recipes from friends and neighbors.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Like,
all over the place.
Were these all yours? Or?
No, they're not mine. Okay. I got them from lots of people. And on the top of each recipe, I tell you where I got the recipe, whether it's knowing somebody or an event that I was part of and got the recipe. And then on the bottom of the page, I tell you what utensils you'll need so you can gather all that before you get started and not be running all over the kitchen looking for something.
This is amazing.
I really love some of these recipes, and I don't cook as much as I used to because there's only two of us and we are so darn busy. Sometimes it's only one of us and I ain't cooking
now,
for one.
I see a recipe here that your son Christopher likes.
Yes, chicken coquin.
Chicken coquin.
Yeah.
Okay. This sounds addictive.
It is.
Okay.
Because it's so juicy and so good and so easy.
Okay, I'm about to write this one down.
Yeah, you got to write one. Yeah.
I need that book because I can't cook to save my life.
Well, this is a book for you.
You got fufu on lock, Doma T. That's okay.
That's it. That's all I can make.
You got fufu?
I know how to make fufu. What you know about it?
I know fufu. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
What you know about it, Mrs. Reed?
I know fufu. Grab that fufu. Yeah. Yeah,
Thank you. I know all about it. Yeah, I'm telling you, we know how to whip it up. I know how to whip it up with the starch and the, come on, with the soup.
That's right.
With the palm nut
soup.
Yeah, with the salt, with the, yeah.
Do it any way you want to, baby.
Well, let them know where they can grab all of your books, all of your writings, and a custom-made piece of clothing.
But go to DaphneMaxwellLee.com because there are a lot of stories on there, a lot of travel photos. You can buy a photo print instead of the book. You can buy note cards. And every year I do a calendar, so look for that in October. And it's usually a different country. Last year, let's see, I was in Scotland. I did Scotland last year. And I did Venice the year before.
Wow.
So keep up with me.
Absolutely. And
Visit often.
And for the Chicago people coming up, Northwestern University events commemorating that powerful sit-in, 100 students, including yourself, 99 others, that transformed Black life on campus. Still a long ways to go, but they're building upon your legacy.
Excellent. I'm so happy that the opportunities are there for more to join Northwestern's push toward the future.
Stipedia.